Welcome to Miami Reporters Roundtable Podcast. In this episode, which is episode 2 of season 5, we got 6 stories lined up that we're going to be discussing. We're going to be talking about the Florida legislature, what they did to address the condo association issue. We're also going to talk about spring break, what is going on in South Beach. We're going to be dealing with a condo owner. They got kicked out of their property 3 years ago and they still can't go back. In addition to that, we'll take a look at the earth-shattering settlement that's come out by the National Association of Realtors, where they're basically changing the whole format and structure of how real estate commissions are paid for residential brokers. We'll deal with insurance and what kind of impact that's having on Florida condo prices. And then finally, we're going to wrap it up with what else? Contractors who are basically ripping off owners of properties in South Florida. So stay tuned. The other side of the break, we're going to go ahead and get into our podcast.
Welcome to the CondoVultures.com podcast with your host, Peter Zalewski, a Miami real estate broker, Wall Street consultant, and expert witness. This podcast is focused on identifying real estate buying opportunities in the South Florida condo market of Miami-Dade, Broward, and Palm Beach counties. The CondoVultures.com podcast is not authorized by the South Florida real estate industry and will most likely annoy many of the region's talking heads. This podcast will feature straight talk and salty language that could be offensive to some. Please remember that past investment success does not determine future gains, especially in South Florida's volatile condo market. For more information, please visit CondoVultures.com. Don't buy a South Florida condo, discounted or distressed, before taking a Condo Vultures correction tour. CondoVultures.com offers weekly bus and walking tours that focus on educating buyers on the how-tos of identifying discounted condos, analyzing the opportunities, and purchasing units. Every tour attendee receives a list of all condo projects in a particular market, a market assessment handout, and unmatched expert analysis. For more information on the condo correction tours, please visit condovultures.eventbrite.com.
This is Peter Zalewski of the Condo Vultures podcast. I hope you're enjoying the podcast, and I wanted to alert you that if you have a property that you're looking to sell in the Tri-County South Florida area, I would encourage you to reach out to Jenny Cortez, a licensed real estate broker with CVRRealty.com. She's my partner. She's been in the business for north of 15 years. More importantly, she knows the market. She knows how to get a deal done. And she also realizes that it's more important to get a price that you can accept and sell the property rather than to hold firm on some price that's never going to be achieved and ultimately languish on the market. So if you're looking to do a deal that you want a skilled expert who can help you sell a property, reach out to Jenny Cortez at 305-865-5859, 305-865-5859, or visit her website, CVRRealty.com. Welcome to Miami Reporters Roundtable Podcast. I'm your host, Peter Zalewski. If you're tuning in this podcast, you're going to hear our conversation by current and former journalists talking about some of the biggest stories that have occurred within the last week as they pertain to the South Florida real estate market, as well as the economy. I have 3 other journalists on the panel. I've sent them all off stories, 2 stories each. I asked them to give them a read. And then what we're going to do is we're going to discuss the stories and we're going to give you straight talk. The thing about real estate in South Florida is there's a lot of hyperbole, a lot of embellishment. And the objective of the podcast is basically cut through it and give you the audience an idea of what might really be going on. So all that being said, let me go ahead and introduce you to members of our podcast this week. We have a gentleman who was a journalist for over 25 years. Right now, he's on public relations and marketing firm called Groos Communication. No one else but John Groos. If you want to check out his website, go to groosspr.com, groosspr.com, and check him out on X, which is formerly Twitter, at John Groos, JeanGruss. What's going on, Mr. Groos?
Hey, Peter. It's always great to be back on your podcast, season 5. I can't believe it's season 5, but it's going to be a good one.
And John, let me remind you, we're still unauthorized. The industry has still not reached out to us and tried to give us some sort of seal of approval. So we're still, we're the rogues. We're the outsiders. And there's no better place to be this particular week with many stories we're going to be dealing with. So
we don't need no stinking seal of approval.
That's right. We don't need no stinking seal of approval. Who else do we have on the podcast? We have a gentleman who's a journalist for over 20 years, worked over at the South Florida Business Journal as well as other publications. Right now, he does consulting and marketing. No one else but John Fackler. If you want to reach out to John, get him on X, which is formerly Twitter. Get him at JT Fackler, JTFAKLER. What's going on, Mr. Fackler?
How you doing, Peter? Glad to be back with my fellow rogues. Good to be here.
Well, it's great to have you back, Mr. Fackler. Over the course of our 5 seasons, every time spring break has come up, You've been our expert in spring break. So we're looking to get into our spring break story this week, and I think it's probably going to be a fun conversation. So we're looking forward to that.
And
who do we have as our visiting journalist this week? We have a woman who is a journalist and still is over 25 years. She wrote about real estate. She wrote about crime out in Los Angeles, Los Angeles Daily News. She's written for the Miami Herald down here. She's actually even taught journalism over at Florida International University, which is based in Miami. No one else but Donna Huffaker Evans. And if you want to reach out to her, she's not on Twitter. She's much younger than the rest of us. She's using IG, Instagram, the gram, the Insta. No one else but Donna Huffaker Evans. And you can reach out to her or follow her at Coco Parkland, at Coco Parkland. COCOPARKLAND. What's going on, Donna?
Okay, Buzza Pedro, how you doing?
Donna, you know, I wanted to have you on the podcast this week because you are a condo owner. You're somebody who's seen what happens on the West Coast where things tend to be a lot more structured. You're a journalist. You can cut through a lot of the fluff. And I think with the stories that we have on the agenda this week, you're the ideal person to give us straight talk. So welcome aboard and we're going to have a great time.
Thank you.
Great, great, great. Let me remind the audience, if you want to send us a comment, if you want to ask a question, reach out to us on X, which is formerly Twitter. Get us at Miami RRP, at Miami RRP, which stands for Miami Reporters Roundtable Podcast. Not AARP, but Miami RRP.
Oh, come
send
on.
Send us a comment and send us a comment and we'll go ahead and we'll incorporate it into the upcoming podcast. And it's a great way to remind you that we're doing 20 podcasts this particular season, season five. We're going to have a whole variety of journalists. We started in mid-March. We're going to go through probably sometime into the summer. So we're here to basically cut through the fluff in the real estate market, especially the changes, and give you the audience an idea of sort of what's going on. Now, before we get into our six stories, remember, I sent two stories off to each journalist, asked them to read it. We're going to discuss it. Let me just bring up our sponsorship. Sponsor for the podcast is my firm. It's called CondoVultures.com, CondoVultures.com. Anybody who's looking for proprietary information about what's going on in the condo market, maybe I'm a little bit more bearish than most, but if you're looking for that type of information related to statistics, rental data, anything and everything related to condominiums in Miami-Dade, Broward, Palm Beach County, go check out the website and I'd encourage you to sign up for the newsletter. So it's condovultures.com. So all that being said, let's go ahead and we're going to get started. John Gruss, we're going to go to you with story number one. This is a piece that's coming out of a publication called Florida Politics. Florida Politics. And let me read you the headline, first couple graphs, and I want you to comment. Headline, legislature approves condo 3.0 bill to boost board accountability in building safety. Let me just remind the audience, what happens, a lot of these condominium associations are voluntary posts. As a result of that, there's been a lot of allegations and even some convictions related to graft, to cronyism, to corruption, to a variety of different things. People are spending money, their sweetheart deals, their kickbacks come at the condo board. And a lot of people were up in arms after the collapse of Champlain Towers South in Surfside, where nearly 100 people died and $1 billion settlement was paid out. And one of the reasons that's starting to emerge is that basically the association didn't do what was necessary, the board of directors. So the Florida legislature is trying to deal with this. So that's what the story is about. So again, John, Florida Politics is the name of the publication. Headline, legislature approves condo 3.0 bill to boost board accountability in building safety. And here is a subhead. Subhead says, Hollywood Democratic Senator Jason Pizzo noted that he proposed many of the bill's reforms and legislation lawmakers largely ignored 5 years ago. First couple graphs, Sean, then I want you to comment. Malfeasant condo board members and associations that for years have skirted Florida law through loopholes in state statutes may soon face a reckoning due to the reform package now bound for Governor Ron DeSantis' desk. Lawmakers unanimously passed the HB 1021. Which will overhaul state laws governing condo oversight and management by holding condos and their boards more accountable for the maintenance, repairs, reserves, and record keeping. Wyoming Island Republican Senator Jennifer Bradley, who carried the legislation with Miami Republican Vicky Lopez, gave a brief overview of the measure's provisions. And I'll just hit on a couple of them, Sean, then I'll ask you to comment. Among the things it creates is new education requirement for condo managers and improves transparency by requiring that buildings records be available online to owners. The bill also clarifies obligations for hurricane protection and revises Florida's anti-SLAPP. And that's an acronym for Strategic Lawsuits Against Public Participants law to bar board members from using condo association funds for defamation actions. Basically shut people up who are in the association. They're bitching and moaning. Some of the condo association members, board members have been able to use the funds of the association, basically shut down the opposition. So John, all that being said, what do you make of this? Did they go far enough? Is this simply a first step? Are we going to see anything significant or material as we go forward, if you're a condo owner?
Yeah, I mean, I think this is a good start. As I've always said, I have said that condo records should be public records and available to anybody through the Sunshine Law. And unfortunately, I mean, you know, records that are only available to owners, I mean, that really is like, doesn't help shine the light on a lot of the major problems that are in condos. And it really doesn't shine the spotlight on potential malfeasance. And what it also does is it still gives the Division of Condos, the state agency, which is basically toothless, it still gives them oversight over condo enforcement, condo law enforcement. I think if you made it a public record,
yes,
then it would shine the light and for all to see all the problems, and would really go a long way to solving a lot of the problems that we've seen. So yeah, this is a good start.
It's the lowest of democracy.
Yeah, they really need to go further. And I think there was a move some years ago to have condo records be part of the Sunshine Law and open records, but you know, that never came to be. And I think they just need to go further.
Interesting. Donna, you were making some comments while John was speaking. You currently own a condo.
I apologize. I didn't mean to step on his words. I apologize.
No. That's what the round table
but
for.
But I am fired Donna. Up. I am pissed. I am pissed. And I'm John, like, is very much more, like, he's a finer gentleman. Like, he's more, dude, I am pissed. And I just want to, shit needs to get wrecked. Like, shit needs to get wrecked. When I had my condo in downtown Los Angeles, it was the first time I was ever on the HOA board, right? So I'd been a journalist already there for like 20 years. Dude, like, once I got to see how the sausage was made, no wonder the sausage never gets made. Nothing happens. What was the question again?
I was wondering, I mean, you live in a condo right now,
yes,
in downtown Miami.
And I'm
you
sitting
feel
in
as
it.
If you're But is your association, are they transparent? If you want information, can you get your hands on it, or is it challenging?
It's challenging if you don't know how to get it, but which I think is wrong. But like I feel like I come to the table with like way more information than most people who are owners in this building. And also the other thing is, like, living in Miami for 8 years, this is my seventh building in 8 years, but it's the first one I bought, right? Like I own the space, or I own the air, I guess is how it works.
Yep.
It's infuriating to try to deal with them because, like, I just sort of, I'm sorry, Peter. It's infuriating to deal with my association until I have to push them. Like, I have to kind of, like, act like this or else they don't listen. Like we got all these, suddenly there were all these special assessments, obviously after the Surfside collapse. But I mean, I'm like, okay, cool. So I'm compartmentalizing all this. And I'm like, so wait a minute, let me get this straight. Now my HOA monthly fees that were $525 when I bought in July of 21 are now like over $800 a month. Plus now we have special assessments. And our pool has been padlocked, chained for months. I mean, there's a lot of problems. And I just want people to get loud about it because I don't think shit gets fixed or solved until you get loud about it.
Wow. Great, great context, Donna. Thank you for that. Donna, we're going to stick with you with story number two. This is a piece that is coming out of local10.com, this EBC affiliate down here in Miami. Now, again, you own a condo. You lived in downtown Miami. You used to own a condo in Los Angeles when you worked over the LA Daily News and others. So I want to get your take. I'm not asking you to give me engineering type of expertise. I'm asking you to sort of talk on behalf of somebody who would own a condo and might be finding themselves in a situation like this. So let me read you the headline first, a couple of graphs, and then I want you to comment. Again, local10.com, which is the ABC affiliate down here in Miami. Headline, North Miami Beach condo residents still not allowed in their homes. Association won't answer questions about the lake. And first couple graphs on them. It's been nearly 3 years since residents of a North Miami Beach condo building were forced out of their homes because it was deemed unsafe. Those residents are still not allowed to go back home. Sonia Novoselsaka remembers the evacuation day clearly. She was inside her apartment. There was a commotion outside, and soon a police officer was at her door. He said to her, "You need to take a little bit of documentation, a little bit of clothing, and you're out. Out in 15 minutes, be out of the building." "I started crying. I was so scared," Sonia said. The 10-story, 1972-built Crestview Towers in North Miami Beach was evacuated on live TV after an engineering report deemed it unsafe, citing poor surface conditions, concrete spalling, and signs of moisture and on the balcony slabs. Those issues were only discovered after the heartbreaking condo collapse at Surfside that occurred just days earlier, prompted by an audit of older buildings. Donna, there's more to it I want to ask you about, but just generally speaking, if you got a knock on your door to basically pack your shit and you got 15 minutes to get out and you're not getting back in and it takes 3 years, how would you feel?
How would I feel or how would I react if somebody came to my door and said, "You have 5 minutes to get all your stuff out"?
Whichever you prefer.
First of all, at this point, I would punch that fucker in the face. I swear to God on everything I hold holy. Next to my door, I have a machete. I have handcuffs. I live in Miami. This is Miami, bro. Back to center. So, Peter, I will say, watching that video clip was heart-wrenching. Where are you going to go? But okay, so it's like everybody in the building, right? We have got to take a stand against this bullshit and this corruption. These people in charge cannot keep getting away with this. I mean, they can't. It's been going on like this for a while, but you know what? Times, they are changing, people. So I am here to tell you, rise up. If you, like, please, I think it's a great idea to know what your rights are, to know what your rights are as not only a tenant, if you're a resident, what your lease says, if you're a homeowner, know the facts. Because these guys are trying to run roughshod over everybody because they think they can just run you over and collect all this money and yada, yada, yada. And their glory days are over.
Now, Donna, let me follow up with that. So according to the piece, Sonia, the woman that the story is based on, she still has to pay her monthly condo fees.
That's just illegal.
She's on the hook.
It's illegal.
And she's on the hook for the special assessments levy in order to make the building safe. In addition to that, she also has to pay rent at another apartment. How do you come up with all of this cash? You're paying for a building to be repaired at the same time you got to pay to live somewhere.
I had to dig through my sofa the other day to find quarters to go do, like, to, like, you know, buy, like, this smoothie. What my advice would be, first of all, we need to keep ringing the bell. We need to keep screaming. I'm mad as hell and I'm not going to take it anymore. And we need to get, this is something that I didn't see in the story, which I think the ACLU needs to be involved at this point. They, folks that are getting fucked over like this need protection. They need representation. And you know what? Being somebody that covered law for like a long time, there are a ton of lawyers out there that will take this on. I would suggest that lawyers need to be notified that this is happening to these people because it is illegal as fuck. You cannot do this. This is like Miami. This is some Miami bullshit. And they've been getting away with this forever. I mean, look at our commissioners. Look at our goddamn the DA. I mean, look at the history of politics in Miami. Their reign of terror is over. So these, like that sweet woman, my advice to her would be like, don't pay shit anymore. Stop paying. And if I need to singularly be the one to reach out and send out press releases to lawyers, I will do it. I used to do it for a living. There are gobs of lawyers. I'll get a billboard. This has to end.
Interesting. And Donna, final question. You live in a condo right now. Would you buy another condo if things remain the same as they are right now?
Would I buy another condo? I wouldn't buy another condo if I'd rather be waterboarded while there was like a cactus. I would rather be waterboarded while a cactus was being shoved up my butt than ever buy another condo again. The only reason I'm still in this situation is because of the situation. So, I mean, I need to move back home to DC. I'm like to take care of my mom. So I'm like packing up and moving out, but like, I'm going to have my friends move in. I can't sell this. I can't sell this yet. It's a nightmare. So my advice to anybody who is currently like an owner who finds themselves in this quagmire, please just stop. Like, particularly, let's go back to Crestview Towers. I apologize. Regarding Crestview Towers,
which is the project in North Miami where the woman, Sonia, that we discussed, still pays her mortgage.
She and needs condo to fees, stop.
Even though she doesn't.
No, yeah. They all need to stop. Sonia and all the other ones that are doing that, they need to stop that immediately. And somebody who isn't possibly somebody who is one of those tenants who might have a little bit more time or whatever needs to reach out to civil rights lawyers when they're out here, and they will take these cases, and these condo associations are going to burn. They're going to burn.
Nice. Thank you. Thank you, Donna. It's an unauthorized podcast. So we're going to go on with story number three. John Fackler, we're going to go to you with story number three. This is coming out of the New York Post. So the story has to do with spring break. Over the course of the years, you've been our go-to person on spring break. You're able to help us understand what's really going on with the various crowds. And to give everybody sort of an update, during the pandemic, the state of Florida made a decision where basically everybody was welcomed here. You didn't necessarily have to wear a mask. You could come down here and not shelter in place like many other states. As a result, Florida really blew up, especially Miami Beach, South Beach blew up. And then we had all kinds of issues where some of the spring breakers were twerking on police cars. And then last year, we actually had two people who were murdered in South Beach. So now there's a brand new city government leadership, and they've been making steps to let it be known that no one is welcome for spring break. Mr. Fackler, let me read you the headline first couple of graphs, and I want you to provide some context, given the fact that you are the spring break expert on the Miami Reporters Roundtable podcast. Here we go. Headline: wild photos show spring break mayhem in Miami Beach as cops arrest more than 250 partiers. First couple graphs: wild photos show the chaos of spring break revelry in Miami Beach as officials confirm they have busted over 250 partygoers despite dramatic preemptive crackdowns by the city, including a midnight curfew implemented over the weekend. The hotspot for spring breakers implemented a curfew that began at 11:59 p.m. and continued until 6 a.m. from Friday through Monday. The curfews came in response to last year's mayhem that resulted in nearly 500 arrests, a seizure of 105 guns, and two fatal shootings. Mr. Fackler, is this overreach by the Miami Beach government? Is this an attempt to try and set a precedent for future years, or is all of this justified in terms of the police presence that's going on right now in South Beach, Miami Beach for spring break 2024, which basically lasts the entire month of March?
Well, it's definitely justified after previous years, but nothing's working. I mean,
what?
The numbers are literally, because there's still another week.
What do you mean nothing's working? What do you mean nothing's working?
I mean, the numbers are, there's still mayhem. There's still crime.
Not in South Beach. Not in South Beach. It's all up in Lauderdale now. And that's because of what?
Well, I know Lauderdale. I know there was also some story about some shootings in Jacksonville Beach. But
Jacksonville
story,
Beach is not in around here. What is happening in Miami Beach?
Donna, I'm glad you have your own opinion on this. But according to the Post story, there's 250 incidents, arrests. There has been no shootings, and there has been no murders. If there's another week of issues, it's going to match the same number of arrests as last year. So these implementations of all these different, things as far as a curfew,
you're completely contradicting. You're contradicting what you're saying. That's why I'm like so fired up. What you're saying is like you're contradicting yourself.
All I'm doing is telling what the Post story said. That's all I'm saying.
Mr. Fackler, let me ask you a follow-up question. In this story, it says that the city of Miami Beach has a video campaign, and they're saying that you can expect things like curfews, bag checks, restricted beach access, DUI checkpoint, $100 parking fees, and strong police enforcement for drug possession and violence. What kind of sign is that sending to these spring breakers, and do you agree with that almost military style approach, or do you think it's a little bit over the top?
Well, I don't know. I don't know what else they can do, because they've tried all these measures and they still had 250 arrests up until today. Now, how many more arrests are going to happen next week? I think it's one more week at least. You know, that it may actually equal what happened last year. So these measures that they're taking is not really helping. I mean, there hasn't been any murders. Let's keep our fingers crossed. But right now, it looks like it's, you know, it's not really working, these measures. And so I don't really know what else they're going to do. You know, I guess they'll come back after next week and decide, okay, what worked, what didn't work. But as far as the number of arrests, I mean, it's, you know, it's going to be the same number every year.
Okay, so what are you basing your, what you're saying now, what are you basing it on? Like, you run a story? Have you seen the 3,000 videos? Do you not understand that what South Beach has done has been spectacular for South Beach? You know where locals go this week? You know where what a local can actually do, like myself, is go to the fucking beach. Because you know where all these assholes have now been forced to go is Lauderdale. So let Broward. I mean, I love what the cops in South Beach did. I fucking love it. It's like they pulled a butt plug out and like it just all the shit spewed up north.
And Mr. Fackler, well, how do you, I mean, is
that's
that...
That's good blowback. I actually agree. A lot of the problem has gone north.
Yes.
That's... And so I agree with Donna. But there's still a lot of arrests. I mean, you're still going to have the same issue every year. So maybe we should just get used to it. You know, I mean, just this is the way it is.
Interesting, Mr. Fackler. I always love a lively debate when you get some journalists together. It's very good to have differing opinions. So thank you, Donna. Thank you, Mr. Fackler. Jean, you knew better than to stick your hand in there because you don't want it. You wanted to be able to have all five fingers. Perfect. Well said. Jean, we're going to go to you with story number four. Story number four is coming out of the BBC out of London. And just so if anybody's not aware, basically the Realtor Association, people who work on the residential side, if you get a real estate license in the state of Florida or anywhere, you then join a club and you're able to utilize something called the Multiple Listing Service, the MLS. It's a thing that pretty much feeds all of the information you see on Zillow, other sites. So I want you to think of it as a realtor, it's a club member. Just like if you play golf and you want to play a golf course, you join a country club and therefore you get to play the course. If you're a sailor, you join a sailing club and therefore you get to dock your boat at the club. So if you have a real estate license, you join a club, you become a realtor, and therefore you get to use the MLS, which is pretty much how a lot of people look for residential real estate. So that is the background. Sean, let me read you the headline first couple graphs of a brand new settlement that just came out, and I want to get your interpretation of it. Headline, real estate fees could fall after settlement with U.S. agents. And a subhead, a settlement in a case against U.S. estate agents, which is realtors, effectively, could mean a reduction in the cost of buying and selling houses. National Association of Realtors and property companies were accused of artificially inflating sales commissions in a series of lawsuits. A settlement, including $418 million in damages, was announced on Friday. The National Association of Realtors agreed to lower commissions and make it easier for buyers to negotiate fees, moves which will eventually result in lower buying and selling costs. The settlement is expected to increase competition, U.S. housing market, where a 6% commission on the sale price is considered standard. Mr. Gruss, why don't you give us some sort of perspective? How significant is this, realizing we're early on, people are still interpreting it, the judge has not yet signed off on this agreement, so things can change. But generally speaking, what's the vibe? What's the feel? How fearful should realtors be? Again, people with real estate license who join a club so they can use the MLS. And how excited should buyers and sellers be that now they might not need to pay that 6% commission, which is pretty much industry standard?
Well, you know, it's interesting because when this came out, one of the immediate impacts was that the stock of residential real estate brokers fell 10% or more. So that tells you right now that at least owners of real estate companies are expecting a drop in revenues and a drop in profits. So I think for generally the residential real estate brokerage industry, it's going to mean shrinking revenues and profits. Now, how much and where and how? I mean, all of that is being vigorously debated. I mean, I've been reading lots of stories about it and listening to news about it. And it seems like Not everybody's got a good answers to really any of the questions. One of the things that sort of I was thinking about was, well, you know, if I am thinking about selling my property or buying a property, I mean, maybe I should wait till some of this shakes out and I can get, you know, maybe I can get a deal, you know, maybe I can negotiate for lower commissions, or maybe I can get a better deal on a home. It's going to be, the next several months is going to be a test. It still has to be approved. I think it doesn't kick in till July. So there's going to be a lot of wheeling and dealing and perhaps some new business models, some new residential real estate business models that are, that provide value and better value and savings for people who list their homes. Some of these things are going to come out. And I think by then we'll have a better idea of what's going on. But I think the initial reaction, particularly on Wall Street, was that it'd be bad for residential real estate brokerages.
Exactly.
Now, Donna and John, I'm going to ask you guys for your opinion, but just for disclosure, I have a real estate brokerage. I've been licensed since 2005. The firm I have, I set up in 06. It's a buy-side brokerage, which means somebody comes to me, they sign an agreement, I represent them as a single agent with a fiduciary, and I'm loving this because now suddenly, before, you basically would meet somebody who had a real estate license, and you say, hey, they tell you, hey, let's go out and see something. And that person, by default, was representing the buyer. They were representing the transaction. They were what's called transaction broker type of relationship. Where the way I work is I work much like an investment banker would, a private banker, anything like that, where I have a client, I have a fiduciary, and my role is to try to help them get the best possible deal. So I just wanted to put that on the record. Now, Donna, you're currently in the process of trying to sell your house.
Condo.
I don't know when you're listing. Yeah, I don't know when you're listing.
I'm currently listed. But my condo is currently listed on MLS. It's 234 Northeast 3rd Street. And it's been listed for, at this point, like 30 days maybe. But it's only been in the last like 15 days that I realized, oh, shit, I can't afford to sell this place right now.
Now, Donna, just for the audience, ballpark, you're trying to get what? You don't have to give us the exact price, but just for conversation.
Oh, it's listed.
Give us a ballpark number.
I can tell you it's listed on, because it's currently listed on the MLS. So my realtor, Gael, is amazing. I listed it for 380 because I'm right in the middle of downtown. It's 647 square feet, and it's in a building called Loft One. And I'm right in the center of everything.
All right, Donna. So 380 grand, basically 6% is pretty normal. And what that means is your realtor, your agent representing you with a fiduciary, they're going to make 3 points. And then anybody bringing in a buyer, they're going to make 3 points. So we're talking about $22,800. Come July, Donna, if the settlement's agreed to, you no longer would be on the hook for the buy side commission. So instead of paying $22,800, you could, in theory, only pay $11,400. So my question to you is, come July, if your listing expires, are you still going to be willing to pay a broker for the buyer, or simply because you want other brokers to bring a buyer in? Or are you going to go it alone and make your realtor go out there and hit the pavement and try to move it on his own or her own for half the commission?
That's the only way I work. And it's a her, and she's amazing. And that's what I'm exactly doing.
Okay, so you're going to leave the extra $11,400 out there for any realtor with a buyer to come in there and incentivize them to buy your unit.
Wait, I got me. Hang on. What? First of all, I'm so sorry. What do you mean it's going to expire in 6 months?
So, a typical listing agreement, and I don't know what yours is, and we don't have to get in your personal confidential stuff, but generally speaking, a listing agreement is 6 months. At the end of 6 months, you can renew, you can cancel, you can do whatever. You might have terms that allow you to cancel it in advance. But right now, I'm assuming the way you have it structured is that you're going to pay out $22,800 if somebody pays you your full price. But come July, you're no longer obligated to pay that if the settlement's agreed, and you can still have it in the MLS. So the question is, will you pay come July 1st? Are you going to drop another $11,400 because you want to be able to move it? Or are you going to force your realtor to find their own buyer and not simply sit back and
use MLS? I don't have to because it's not going to expire. So I'm going to do the thing that's going to help me keep more money in my pocket. And my realtor's already great. And so I think this is great because now all the work that I usually do myself anyway, fuck the other people. Like, I'm doing most of the work anyway. So why would I want to have more money out of my pocket to give to somebody who's really not looking out for my own best interest? So I love
it. So I guess what you're saying then is come July or when your lease listing expires, you're only going to pay 3 points instead of 6.
Yes, sir.
3 for your real. Okay. So you're going to have the chance and you're like, that's it. If you want to relist it, I'm only giving 3 points. I'm not paying 6 points.
Exactly.
Perfect. Mr. Fackler, you used to own real estate. You've worked with people in and around. Let's say you're a buyer. Donna's an example of somebody who has a property looking to sell. Let's say you're a buyer. You want to go out and look at a property, Mr. Fackler, because you want to buy it. Are you going to be willing to sign an agreement where you empower somebody to work on your behalf? And if you buy anything, you're going to pay them a commission? Or are you going to try to go it alone and think that you can use Zillow and everything else and you don't actually need one of these realtors, 62,000 realtors in Miami that are running around? So what's your take on that, Mr. Fackler?
I would probably go it alone, believe it or not. I mean, I know enough about the listings, about Zillow, where to go.
Absolutely.
The online databases. So in my mind, I don't need the help. So why pay the money?
Now, John, as the referee, Donna obviously has an ability to put more money in her pocket if she sells it because she's no longer going to, in theory, pay 6 points out, about $11,400. Mr. Fackler, he doesn't want to spend any money. Who's likely to get the upper hand in this type of scenario? Will it be Mr. Fackler based on his negotiating skills and everything he's trying to do? Or is it likely to be Donna who's making 3 points and has somebody who is a veteran, has some experience, and can basically look out for her best interests? What say you, Mr. Bruce?
Well, neither one.
Okay.
Well, I mean, if I'm a seller, I mean, I want buyers to come and I'm happy to pay a commission to for that to happen. I mean, this is why we have real estate agents who represent buyers. I mean, I want to have a little carrot dangling outside my home to get multiple offers and have like a bidding war on my property.
Mr. Gruce, everything's still being sorted out. The judge hasn't signed off on this deal to the National Association of Realtors and basically the plaintiffs. But there is some talk that potentially when you put a listing in the multiple listing service and it pops up on Zillow, it's not going to say how much money is being offered to buyers
to
stop steering to certain properties, which will pay a big commission and other ones that won't. How do you think that's going to play out, Mr. Gruce?
Exactly. That's the big issue. I mean, none of the MLS listings will have any information about the buyer's commission, the buyer's agent commission. And so it's going to be really difficult. But I think, brokerage agencies can put it on their own websites. There might be some websites. I mean, hell, Zillow might put it up there. I mean, separately, you can segregate it. I mean, there'll be websites that'll pop up that'll say like, that'll promote. You know, I think they're just going to have to be creative and have like a better marketing scheme. And I'm sure something like that will come up because, like, if I'm a seller, I want buyers to come.
Unless you don't, because it's listed, but nothing's moving right now because the market's in the tank. So all these places are listed, but give me one second. Like, I'm just trying to say, like, I know this from personal experience, not just my unit, but like a lot of times, like units will be listed, but then there's some reason why, oh, you can't actually see it right now. And that's because the person who owns the unit, for example, me, isn't ready and can't sell. So right now, yeah, it's listed because I want to like sort of let people know that, yeah, I am trying to sell, but I'm not trying to sell this minute because this shit just happened.
We're going to have to see how this plays out, but definitely the residential real estate world is changing.
Oh, yeah.
Let's go with story number 5. Donna, we're going to go to you with story number 5. This piece is coming out of Business Insider. I'm going to read you the headline for a couple of graphs. Then I want you to comment. Again, you own a condo, so I figure you'd be a person to sort of respond. Headline, Florida condo owners are stuck in a train wreck if prices drop and mounting insurance rates scare away buyers. They actually have 3 bullet points. Bullet point number one, rising insurance costs and HOA fees, which are condo dues, are forcing some Florida condo owners to sell. Point number two, buyers are weary of the same costs, however, causing home prices to slide in major cities. And point number three, it's a symptom of the insurance crisis and the affordability problem plaguing Florida homeowners. Remember, 3 years ago, there was a tower that collapsed in Surfside. It was a disaster. 98 people died. $1 billion was paid out. Insurance prices have gone through the roof in the state of Florida. A year later, there was a hurricane. So insurance prices are really getting ratcheted up quite a bit. So Don, I'll read the first couple of graphs and I want you to comment. Florida condo market is caught in a storm. Owners are trying to unload units in the face of a skyrocketing cost of maintaining an apartment in Florida. At the same time, prospective buyers are driven away from those same fees. And here's a quote from a gentleman named Joe Humpner, who owns a condo in Jupiter near West Palm Beach in Palm Beach County. He says, it's definitely been a slow motion train wreck. Listings have soared as prices fall in major Florida cities, according to a new report from real estate listing site Redfin. The number of listings in February jumped nearly 30% in markets like Jacksonville and Miami compared to the same time last year. Meanwhile, price drops by as much as 7% in Jacksonville to $254,000 a door and 3% in Miami to $385,000 a door. By contrast, median condo prices nationally rose by 8% over the same period to around $340,000. Donna, true or false, you're living through this. You have your place up for sale. You had mentioned that you have some special assessments. Your maintenance fee has gone up. You're trying to sell. Why don't you give us your concept of the lay of the land right now in the condo market in South Florida, especially downtown Miami, greater downtown Miami?
If you currently own a condo in Miami-Dade or Broward, well, fuck Broward. If you currently own a condo in Miami-Dade, particularly if you're in downtown or in Brickell, don't you dare sell. Hang on to it. Do what everyone is doing right now, because this is what's actually happening. People are cribbing up in other people's places. You got 5-6 people living wherever. You got people doubling up. You got people coming in. For me, my HOA association allows Airbnb with, you know, certain documentation, whatever. You can also sublease is also allowed in my building. So that's why I have chosen. I'm going to have my friend and her boyfriend, they're going to sign a lease with me. All of this is going to be on the board, like everything above board, all documentation. They are going to sign off on it. And they're going to pay me to live here for, I'm going to do 6 months. And while I'm up north, like dealing with, you know, my mom and stuff like that, but I'm not going to sell my property. So do whatever you can to hold on to your property. If that means you need to, like, you know, rent out your place to somebody else and get that money and you need to go be in someone's basement, do it. Whatever you do right now, do not sell your condo in Miami.
Donna, last season, I made the argument that it was actually cheaper to rent than to own based on the insurance fees, HOA, things like that. What's your take on it? Is it better to own or is it better to rent right now if you want to live in greater downtown Miami?
They both suck. You know, and the other thing, I mean, and obviously, you know, you'll edit this if you want to, but like when I told you that I was looking around, I bought this place in July of 21. You're like, loft one. Oh God, you don't want to go there. I bought this place in July of 21 for $215,000. And right now, based on the comps, that's why I listed it for 380. So if I had been able to get out of here like 4 months ago, it would have sold in a second. But now the market's whatever it is. So is it better to rent, or the rent in Miami is crazy? I say probably buying right now would be better, because you can argue. You have somebody coming in now. They have a better leg to stand on. My advice to anyone right now trying to rent or buy in Miami, just know the laws, read everything, and do your own due diligence. Do not rely on your realtor. You have a brain. It's your money. You earned it, or someone gave it to you because it's Miami. Just do your own due diligence. Just do your own due diligence.
And Donna, you made reference to it earlier in the podcast, but we're going to break up the podcast in segments. Ballpark, what was your maintenance fee when you first got into the building, and what is it now? Just so people can get a sense of how much this insurance crisis is having an effect on individual unit owners.
Oh, sure, sure. So I believe it was super low. Like, it was one of the lowest. It was like $525 a month. Or maybe it was like $5.25. And then I think it went up to like, so July 21 is when I bought. So it started out like $5.25 a month. And then, you know, it went up to $6.25, no big deal. Now it's $8.50. And there's like, they've not been really clear about these assessments. And I've reached out a couple times and I'm like, just send me the documentation. And I know for it, I swear to God, it all goes back to Surfside. This building, Loft One, has hella mad issues with the watering system, like the plumbing of the building. And what they're really trying to do is change it all up. They need like $35,000 to like fix the air conditioning and all this shit. And they're calling this a special assessment. Man, this should have been broke forever. But they're using Surfside and the safety of the residents. Go fuck Yeah.
So interesting.
Yep.
So no good politician lets a crisis go by without taking advantage of it, is what you're saying.
No.
They could have done this before.
What's a good politician?
Andrew, that's a good point. A good politician. Sean, let me ask you. So Donna laid out her scenario. You currently are renting, correct?
Right. Yeah. Okay, I would never buy.
What would it take you to get off the fence, the perch, and buy a condo in Miami? Because I think you're renting in a building, which is actually a condominium, but you're renting it for someone who owns it, correct?
It is. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So how does the market get you off the perch and get you to take out a unit like Donna's unit? What is that?
I don't know. $125 a square foot.
I was told there'd be no math.
2008 pricing, maybe.
For God's sake.
The problem is that it's a HOA fees are a total wild card. Like there is no certainty as to how much you're going to have to pay in HOA fees and special assessments. And that goes for taxes and insurance, common area maintenance, you know, broken pools. Like there's no certainty as to how much you're going to pay. I mean, Donna could be paying $800, $850 now. Hey, maybe next year it's going to be $1,200.
Hey, but
maybe
you know
$1,800.
What? Hey, but you know what? I also purchased this outright in cash for $215 in July of 21. So all of a sudden my ROI is going to be on point as fuck. So really the only thing I'm paying every month is my HOA fees. So,
But if it goes way up, I mean, what if your HOA fees
double? Oh my God.
Doubled?
Have you ever owned? Cause you're like, no, I would never own the girl I rent. Dude, do you understand?
Yeah.
Like who gives a hairy ass rat fuck? Like if I, okay, so the market's weird right now or whatever. Okay. So let's say the 6 months gets up or whatever. And I've got my friends in here for 6 months and then come like May or June when the market like probably stabilizes a little bit more. Let's say, that who cares if it falls to 350? That's still an ROI from 215. So hello, and then it's cash money in my pocket. So what are you doing with rent? Is that where you get all your money and you just pull it out of your pocket and you flush it down the toilet? Fuck renting. I've rented my whole life.
Insurance, I don't have to worry about it. Taxes, I don't have to worry
about it.
Oh, for
God's sake, you're wrong.
Monthly maintenance fees.
Peter, how much longer is this going to last?
Washer breaks. Don't have to worry about it. You know,
fascinating discussion. See, Donna, that's why I wanted you on this podcast. You're not afraid to get in there and scrap. So kudos to you. Kudos to Jean. Mr. Fackler, John Fackler, we're going to you with story number six. Mr. Fackler, I'll read you the headline. I'll read you the first couple graphs, and I want you to comment. Now, one of the things we've been discussing this podcast is about the condo associations, the corruption, the alleged corruption, kickbacks, a variety of different things. So that's sort of the setting. So let me read the headline first, couple of graphs of this story coming out of the Miami Herald. Headline, contractors got paid $135,000 to remodel a Miami home. They did only the demolition, cops say. So this is just not a condo problem we're dealing with. This also potentially is a single family house problem
we're
dealing with in terms of the alleged corruption. Here we go, Mr. Fackler. A Durrell contracting couple who got half their $270,000 upfront for a Miami home renovation disappeared after doing only the demolition part of the job, Miami police said. Then again, checking Florida Department of Business and Professional Regulation online records shows that neither Luis Arvelo Terran nor Maria Rosales Solorzano were qualified to finish the job they started. They weren't even qualified to start the job.
Yep.
Among Arvelo Terrans and Rosales Solorzano and their company, Luma Solutions, there isn't one general contractor's license. Arvelo Terran, 34, and Rosales Solorzano, 33, were arrested together Tuesday at Party City store in Doral. Separately, each has been charged with grand theft by a contractor, organized fraud over $50,000, and a misdemeanor for contracting without a license. Bond was set at $30,500 each. State records say that Rosales Solorzano and Arvelo Terran registered Luma Solutions with the state on October 22nd, 2020. Mr. Fackler, is this a one-off where some contractor basically is running a hustle? Is the corruption only in condo associations like we've been discussing? It just is par for the course because prices have gone up and we've had so many people relocate here from places like California and New York because of the pandemic. What say you, Mr. Fackler? And you used to write about white-collar crime. So why don't you give us your take?
Well, we also, in the podcast previously, talked about this very issue. This is not new news. It's actually fairly common. We talk about doing due diligence. If you're a homeowner,
yes.
I mean, it's very simple to check to see who's got a license and who doesn't. Like you said, you can go through the state, you can go through miamidade.gov. They've got a list of everybody who's all the general contractors who are licensed. I don't understand why this homeowner did not check to see who they were.
Yes.
I mean, it'd been very, very simple to do. I mean, it got me wondering because, you know, they didn't interview the homeowner in the story. And I'm just wondering, you know, what is this really all about?
Exactly.
I mean, listen, I could have gone in there myself. Would they pay $100 change to just do demolition? This was a complete renovation and an addition. That's how much money this guy was putting into it. $270,000, I mean, going on. But you could, you know, give me a sledgehammer. I'll go in there. I'm talented. I'll knock that place apart for a couple of grand. You know, I don't have a license. I mean, I don't get what's going on here. Is it possible that this guy could not, and I'm not accusing anybody of this.
Yeah, everything is alleged because the gentleman was arrested.
It's alleged.
Trial yet, as well as
right, exactly. But, you know, is it possible the guy couldn't pull the permits or didn't want to pull the permits, and this is a workaround? He figured the guy didn't have a license. Maybe he knew he didn't have a license, and maybe this is his workaround to get the work done. We've done stories in the past where, you know, there was some renovation of a patio or some stupid. This is a complete house. I mean, how is that this guy did not check to see that
Mr.
this guy...
Fackler. Mr. Fackler, if I can interrupt, so the job was $270,000. Okay, it was demolition, it was complete rehab.
Right.
Half the money was put up front. Basically, right. A contractor will say, "Give me half up front. I got to buy materials." Blah blah blah
exactly.
blah. What would you recommend to anybody who maybe is watching this podcast? Maybe they have their own property. They're thinking about doing renovation. When you've done work in the past, you pay everybody half up front, or have you determined something through the years? And have you ever had an experience like that, Mr. Fackler?
I've never personally had an experience like that, so I wouldn't know. But I'm just saying, first, do your due diligence. Make sure the guy's licensed. As far as the negotiation up front, I'm not really sure. I mean, if that's commonplace, perhaps it is. So I don't know really, you know.
It's Miami.
To tell you on that.
It's Miami. You have to, like, your due diligence has to be like, I so agree with you, John. Like, everything you said was on point. Like, this is Miami. Mm. Like, we already know what this is. So, like. It's kind of on, I mean, whatever, like, obviously I'd feel kind of bad-ish, but I mean, like, you've got to look this shit up yourself. That's why, that's why I think there's something shady going on. And it's Miami.
Yeah.
So again, there's always something shady going on.
There's also another possibility. And again, they didn't put the age of the gentleman who was the homeowner, but it's possible, you know, he's a boomer like me. We're more trusting, you know, we're more, you know, somebody. You know what I'm saying? I mean,
John, you might be a boomer, but you also, just as you said in your own words, you also know that if you're going to shell out any money to have anybody work on anywhere you live, you're going to damn well right know that it's a general contractor. Like, you're going to look up their license, because that way they're covered. Like, you're covered. If you just got, you know, wackadoodlebros.com, you know, and they're going to come over with like,
and supposedly that the demolition was so extensive that it's uninhabitable as it stands. So this guy is...
And guess who's getting kickbacks from this? Like, who do you think's getting kickbacks from that? I mean, it's so, like, it's exhausting, but you have to do it. You have to look at it.
Yeah.
Great insight, Donna. Great insight, Mr. Packer. John, let me ask you a question before we wrap up this podcast. There's a lot of construction that goes on in Miami. You used to write about banking. And when a bank gives a construction loan for a tower to go up, they typically put out disbursements of money based on when you hit certain threshold or milestones. You have any understanding about how that money is typically paid out? Typically, there's a little bit to get started. And then once you do this, we give you more money. Could you sort of lay it out for the audience? Typically, the way it works in the banking world?
Yeah, I mean, in fact, it's commonplace in residential construction, single family home construction. It's called a schedule of draws. And basically, every time something gets done, then they get paid. So, you know, you're not putting all the money out all at once. You're putting out, you know, small
exactly.
amounts of money for everything that gets done all along the way. That way it ensures that the contractor is fulfilling his obligation.
Smart.
And you're paying him as he goes along, and you're not paying it all at once and then they run away. You know what I'm saying? So like the schedule of draws is really important, especially on a bigger project, $270,000. I mean, you know, you could pay like, you know, 10 grand up front for him to get started. Once he gets that done, then you pay another 20 grand and then another 20 grand, you know, progressively as things get done. And then that way you're not out $250,000 if the guy like screws up or runs away with
exactly.
it.
You know? Exactly. Exactly. Exactly.
And that's for like small projects or giant condo towers. I mean, it's the same principle. I mean, in banking, the banks would never give you $100 million loan like all at once.
Fantastic.
They know better than to do that, you know.
Great insight. I want to thank the panelists for participating in this week's podcast. Let me thank Jean Groos. Jean was a journalist for over 25 years. Right now, he's public relations and marketing. His own firm called Groos Communications. You can get him on his website, groosspr.com, groosspr.com. You can also get him on X, which is formerly Twitter, at Jean Groos, JeanGrouss. I want to thank John Fackler. John was a journalist for over 20 years, worked in publications, including Software and Business Journal. Right now, it does marketing and consulting. If you want to get a hold of John on X, which is formerly Twitter, get him at JT Fackler, at JT Fackler, JTFAKLER. And I also want to thank the lively one of this podcast. And this is what I love about her. This is Donna Huffaker Evans. She was a journalist for over 25 years. She worked out the LA Daily News, lived out in Los Angeles. She's been on the ground in Miami for 8 years or so. She's written for the Miami Herald. She's also taught over at journalism over at Florida International University. Donna is too young. Therefore, she doesn't use Twitter. She uses Instagram.
I just don't like Elon Musk.
The Insta, the Gram. So if you want to check her out, and she has some lively posts, go to Coco Parkland, Coco Parkland. COCOPARKLAND. And I'm Peter Zalewski of the Miami Reporters Roundtable Podcast. If you want to send us a comment, if you want to agree with Donna, you want to agree with Mr. Backler, Sean, myself, anybody, get us on X, which is formerly Twitter. Get us at Miami RRP, at Miami RRP, which stands for Miami Reporters Roundtable Podcast. It is not AARP. And let me encourage you that if you are looking for statistics, you're looking for deep dive into what's going on in the marketplace from the condo and stuff like that, I'd encourage you to go to our website, which is condovultures.com, condovultures.com. We'll be doing 20 of these podcasts this particular season, which is season 5. We encourage you to check them out. We typically post the entire podcast, and then we'll break it down in 10-minute segments or so. So make sure to check us out on YouTube.
Stop.
Make sure to check us out on any social media. So all that being said, thank you, everybody, for participating. Until next time, take care. Ciao, ciao.
It's a simple formula, and it works. Buy low, sell high. We're Condo Vultures, and when it comes to your real estate, we help you buy low. At Condo Vultures, we represent the buyer, and now's the time to buy. Log on to condovultures.com for more information. Condovultures.com. And remember, before you sell high, you have to buy low. Featured in the New York Times, Wall Street Journal, 60 Minutes, and Time Magazine. Condo Vultures Realty, a licensed Florida real estate brokerage capitalizing on the condo correction since 2006.
This is Peter Zalewski of the Condo Vultures Podcast. Before I started doing these podcasts, I was in the business of being a licensed real estate broker, a contributing columnist for the Miami Herald, as well as the Miami Real Deal, but also extra witness work in consulting. So if you are looking for an expert witness, or if you're looking for consulting services, a straight talk perspective as to what's going on in a particular marketplace, a building, or what happened previously, for whatever your situation is, whether you are an attorney, whether you are an institutional fund looking to invest, or whether you're a lender
who's trying to come up with some sort of a strategy and approach for your lending committee going forward. I don't just want to be able to help you. To get a hold of me, please reach out to Peter@condovultures.com. That's Peter@condovultures.com. Or give me a call to the office at 305-865-5859, 305-865-5859.